is going on, Nash? Welcome back to Get in the Trunk. Season 6, Episode 17. 3 seasons long, we've been playing the Impossible Landscapes campaign, and I gotta say, some of you that may have read this adventure would know this, some may not, but you can kind of feel it coming. It is the end, my friends. We are coming very, very quickly to the end of this campaign, and I can't believe it. At the end of last episode, our characters stand before the great palace of Ythil in the land of Carcosa, a place that they have been hearing about, reading about, seeing in their dreams, seeing on paper or on postcards for the last 3 years of gameplay for us. And now it is culminating in this masquerade, which begins tonight. I truly don't know how long it's going to go. It is an improv show. We'll see what happens at this particular party. But before we dive right into it headlong, I think a good place to start to warm us up a little bit is just to talk about parties and great parties. Now, some of you, more than others, Sydney, may have been to some amazing parties. I don't know. But my question to each of you is, what is the best party that you have ever been to in your life? The best party. Now, best party has a lot of different, very subjective criteria that could say, you know, you could be, what was the biggest party? What was the loudest party? What was the best for your specific tastes kind of party? I don't know. It's a big question. And for me personally, I don't have an answer top of mind because the best parties that I've ever been to, I mostly forget for reasons.
Yeah.
Francis, is there anything that hops out to you, anything that jumps out first instinct for a great party that you've been to in your time?
I mean, in my mind, it's just more of like the parties in early high school where it was like out of control. Like that's not, it was great in the fact that it was just like, this is madness and there are no adults here. Like I just remember, you know,
and where was this? Sorry.
This is in Maryland. This is in Maryland.
In Maryland.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this is like, you know, a lot of kids who lived in like Potomac, Maryland had like big houses and like, I don't want to name names, but there was a there was a kid whose parent was in charge or CEO of a very large fast food chain, and they had a very large house in which there were very wild and unruly parties full of teenagers just doing whatever you could possibly get away with. And wow. I just remember thinking, like, this is wild. There was like an indoor pool. It was wild. It was wild.
And did you get wild, Francis? Did you get a little? Did you break the law?
I cannot recall. I can neither confirm or deny my behavior.
Statute of limitations is up. Yes, I think you can talk about it.
Thank you. Speak to my lawyer. Thank you very much.
So you're talking like mansion house party in high school.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Straight like, out of a movie. Straight
yeah, exactly. Out of a movie. Exactly. And I was just like, wow, this is insane. Good times. Thankfully, it wasn't my home.
Troy, you been to any good parties in your time or hosted any good party? I've been to a few of your parties. They're pretty good parties.
Yeah. Christmas parties are pretty awesome. Jam.
Yeah. Do any stand out as the greatest party you've ever been to?
Well, my favorite party I've ever been to is my wedding reception. That was a great fucking party.
That was a great time.
That was a great party.
Four of us were here at that party.
Yeah.
That was just like, it was everything I had hoped for. But the Christmas parties are always great. I'm trying to remember. I mean, I've been to a lot of parties.
Exactly. It's because hard to
yeah. Especially like going back to high school. I didn't drink in high school. I didn't drink until like late into college. But I remember like high school theater parties were great because we had sleepovers. They were like co-ed sleepovers. So that was a big deal as a teenager. But I mean, the college theater parties that we would have were such like unbelievable ragers. I can just remember like hearing like you two blaring, everyone standing, like probably like 60 people standing on furniture, just screaming you two at the top of their lungs, drinking the shittiest beer, all sorts of smells in the air. I mean, epic parties that would go until the sun came up. You know, the grad school parties weren't as good. They were different. They were like New York parties. Everybody was an asshole.
Yeah.
But yeah, high school, you know, college theater parties were the fucking best.
I had a similar experience, I feel, with, it's so funny, whatever it is, theater kids, and then these speech and debate nerds. You would think that there is no way that they could hang in terms of their partying with the jock crowd, the rugby team that was at my school. They would have the parties that would always like send people to prison. But like these parties that I had, and not just at my school, but like with multiple schools in college, of these speech debate kids were wild. I mean, just the all night long, crazy amounts of drinking, drugs, and just sex with everybody. It was It was insane. Like these people would just all hook up with each other. I didn't get into that game because it was like way too dangerous, not only physically, but also like it just was so much drama. And I found that would happen, you know, in high school as well. While we weren't partying, there was like, you know, all these theater kids, somebody would hook up with somebody and then there'd be all this drama and intense internal strife over the romantic entanglements. But yeah, in college, it was like everybody's experimenting. Dudes are kissing dudes, chicks are kissing chicks, you know, and it's just like, what is going on? That was like my introduction to college. I'm 18 years old and all these 20 somethings are going at it. I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, I had forgotten about that. Some wild parties in, from the speech and debate kit.
Those kids go hard.
Skid, I'm sure you have something involving several A-list celebrities.
Yeah.
Hall of Fame baseball player.
Yeah. So I used to love
partying with Derrick Henry.
Pete Rose. Derrick Henry has the craziest parties.
It's wild. It's wild.
I love a good party, and used to back in like college, like theater parties were amazing. But there was one party that I went to with Nick Shelton, my friend Nick Shelton. It's a friend of ours throwing this party down in Colorado Springs. And I can't get into a lot of details about it, but it was an incredibly wild party. A handful of people ended up going to jail.
Oh, man. And, that's a good part.
And there was, at one point, we were like sitting. It was the things that like kind of eased down a little bit. And like me and Nick and a couple of the guys are like in a room, just like having a beer. And we hear the gunshots outside. And like turn to each other. It's like, was that a gun? It's just like. Yeah, it sounded like it. It was like, should we get down or something? And it's like, right, I guess. And so we just sort of slowly slid down the couch, like onto the ground. It was a fun time. It was a good party.
Wow.
It was a very good party. But The other really great party I went to was at Mile High Stadium. It was to greet the some of the team on the way back from the Super Bowl 32. And it was that was a great fucking time. That was awesome.
Good party right there.
Yeah, it was a very good party.
You know, one of the best surprise parties, it wasn't really a party, it was just a surprise situation. And we were together for that. Skid, I think you were there for a little bit. Sid, I can't remember. You must have been there. And Troy, you were definitely there. Was post New York live show when we went out to that bar with Kate.
Yeah.
Remember, it was like Kate's first show, one of her first shows.
The Halloween show.
You didn't go to the bar afterwards.
At the Bell House?
Oh, I did.
Did you?
Troy doesn't remember.
No, I was sitting at the bar with Francis.
Yeah, I remember
I thought you were like, I'm tired. I'm going to go home.
Maybe that was another year, but it must have been another year. There was a DJ, and the DJ was absolutely killing it.
I know which one you're talking about. It was not in the, the Bell House was Kate's first one.
Okay, this was Gramercy after
this
Gramercy.
This was Gramercy. We went to that bar and a bunch of the nays showed up.
Yeah.
That party was awesome. This was like first year. It was COVID year. And we were just caution to the wind.
Everybody was like primed to go.
Just ripped masks off, threw in the air, just like everybody fist pumping, dancing. I mean,
my sister had the night of her life.
Oh, that's right.
I've never seen her have that much fun.
That's great.
She was going nuts. It was so great.
Yeah. A great, I love a great improv party, right? So it's not planned. You didn't send invitations. You just all went to a bar, but it just, the chemistry all came together. The music was amazing. The crowd was great. Like, oh, that was an awesome. So were you there?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't there.
Oh man, if that was,
I don't remember why.
If you that just was
had a to like, after
yeah,
the
you
show
and I had a hotel in the city.
Yeah, if it was
I was so
early,
drunk I couldn't walk six blocks.
If it was early COVID, I might not have lived in the city yet. I just might not have been able to come in.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't remember.
Interesting.
Yeah, those post COVID parties.
Sydney, have a memory of a fantastic party.
You make it seem like I'm like a party animal.
No, you just know cool and interesting people. That's all.
So the best parties, I agree. Like my favorite parties are pretty like small, more intimate parties with my good friends. That's like the best. But the two that I thought of with this question were not like the most fun. But they were like the ones that stick in my mind because I'm just like, I can't believe I went to that.
yeah.
The first was...
Epic party is different from great party, but
yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like, not necessarily the same.
The first one was, I was working for Vine, the 6 second video app, and we were-
I didn't know you worked for Vine.
Yeah, I was on the culture team.
No, I thought that you were just like a personality that was crushing it on Vine.
That as well. But for a little while, I was like, maybe I'll go into tech. So we were out in California and we were working like VidCon or like something big. And they were having a huge industry party for like influencers, but also, you know, people who work behind the scenes. So I went and it was like LA mansion party.
Yeah.
First time I'd ever like, I was just like, I'm so scared to go. I went, I didn't know anybody. I saw Andy Milonakis, who I was a huge fan of. And I was like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. I don't even know. I'm not supposed to talk to him, but like, I want to talk to him so bad. I loved his show. So I was like kind of hovering near him and I was like, maybe I'll say something. And he was at a table and I realized the table was make your own, like there was connoisseurs there to make your own vape pens with different flavors as party favors.
Oh, that's so LA.
And I like,
that's
I just,
so LA.
It was so ridiculous. Like it was ridiculous. And I made like a vape pen. They were like, what's your preference? And I was like, I don't know anything about anything. They were like Captain Crunch cereal. It is. And like gave it in a gift bag and I took it and then I left. Cause I was like, so scared of everything.
Really?
But it was crazy. Like I walked around, you know, it was like, there's a pool and there's like a whole glass back room to this beautiful mansion. And I was like, I have to go home. But that was really fun. It was cool. The craziest party was when I was living in New York City in, I lived in the McKibben Lofts, which was like a converted industrial building. I had six roommates, one bathroom. Like
that sounds like a setting in Impossible Landscape.
Yeah.
Like, I lived in the McKibben Loft.
The McKibben Loft. Yeah. It was weird.
I was never seen again.
The New Yorkers know of it. Like it's a weird, weird place. So I lived there, six roommates. Everybody was European. It was a really fun like college time. And they invited me to this party that was like an avant-garde, underground art music scene thing. And my younger sister was visiting me. And she was like 17 and I was, you know, 21. So I was like, all right, you're coming to the cool party. And I took her to this party with all my European roommates. And it was like full on performance art of like half naked women with chains all over them in blood. And they were like making out and like wrestling. And while that's going on, also like a party is happening with music and like it's dark. There was not enough oxygen to light a lighter, to like light a cigarette. Like it was so crowded and hot. We're all doing drugs. We get out of there. We open the door. It's like the sun, like, ah, like we didn't even know what time it was. And that party was the best because one, I got to bring my younger sister who was just like in awe the whole night. I was cool. And then she and I went to Long Island and went skydiving at 8 a.m. after drinking and doing drugs all night and went skydiving the next day. So I combine all of that into like the craziest night and today that I ever had.
That's
but in terms
insane.
Of fun, way Troy's parties are more fun because I get to hang out with you guys.
Right, but, exactly. Epic. Exactly. Yes.
We had a bounce house at my Christmas party and there were more adults in it than kids.
Kate and I were dunking on the five-year-olds.
On that net in the bounce house.
In the bounce house at Troy's.
Own that bounce house.
That was awesome. You know who had great parties? It was Matt Ambrosia. He used to live in the city with like four other dudes that were all like, and they're like 30s, and they would throw these amazing parties in this apartment in Hell's Kitchen. And I remember once bringing, speaking of underage people, I was coaching in speech and debate a kid from the college I graduated from, and he was up in New York staying at my place, and we were like working stuff. He might have been 19 or something like that. And I was like, you want to go to this party? And I took him to Ambrosia's apartment, and it was just like, you know, I mean, that was a frat party. Like, it was all beer pong and music and just great crowds. It was really, really fun. Smashed into a Hell's Kitchen apartment, you know, smoking cigarettes out the window or on the fire escape. It was really, he had great parties. But yeah, I was like, once I was into it, I was like, it's illegal that this kid is here and I should not have done that. It makes no sense. And I'm an idiot. But he, I'm sure, had the time of his life. Anyway. Let us return to our adventure. This party, man, what to expect? I don't know. I don't know, of course. So we're going to dive in and just see what happens. By way of a brief recap, last episode, you were in the clockwork factory where Mr. Kremensky, creepily working on the clockwork child, making these mannequins, overseeing these costumes, these masks. You know, you guys really don't delve into too much like, why are you doing this or what is all this stuff doing here? It seems pretty self-evident to you, at least. You assume that these are sets and props of the great play. Roger seems to have some sort of epiphany that it's like, I do not have control of anything I do right now. I am a character in the play, and so I will put on my costume, that of a clown. Bobby starts to be called by Mr. Kremensky, Colonel William Walford. So he starts to take on his father's persona in a way, something maybe he always truly wanted. So he dresses in this military garb, this ceremonial military garb with flashy, all of his chest candy. Yes, exactly. with a samurai mask and a katana. Just amazing. Sydney, Vicky starts getting very upset. She says she can't do this. She starts to come to this realization that perhaps everything in her life has been some sort of illusion that has been crafted and put in front of her by this king in yellow. People, things that she once thought were people or loved ones might have been marionettes, puppets that were run by this, by someone in Carcosa. And she starts to cry and says, I just can't do it anymore. I just want to get out. But she remembers she needs to leave with her son. And she believes her son is with Abigail. Abigail told her she can only keep him safe for so long. She has to get to the party. Did she have the bottle? She dresses in a gorgeous lady of the court dress from the 1600s, basically. And what was your mask? Oh, just, I can't remember your mask. Porcelain doll mask. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see the artwork on this. Let's hope there's artwork one day. Porcelain doll mask and this beautiful blue gown, right? It's a blue gown. Neil is the one who holds this bottle. The bottle of J.C. Lintz has his name on it. You've heard this name now for a long time, and this seems to be culminating in this masquerade party. Neil holding this bottle and giving himself over so fully to this that he believes art is truly at this point uniting with life in such a way that he believes he can craft life itself. And honestly manifest anything he wishes from his own artistic mind. He has never been happier. It's very interesting. And so he decides to go to this party as an 19th century aristocrat, very fancy tuxedo with a Burt Lancaster mask. And And that is how he reveals himself. And last we left you guys, you walked out of the Clockwork Factory toward the palace into the gardens that precede the gates of the palace. And in those gardens, you recognize the Washington Square Park. That seems to be what these gardens are. It's as if Washington Square Park, what it actually is the gardens of the Palace of Yathil just placed into the middle of New York City. In that garden, you recognize the tiny clown, at least Roger does, by the fountain in the center, same place that he was at 20 years ago when you first met Agent Marcus and got the rundown of a missing artist named Abigail Wright. You see this clown. The clown acknowledges you in your acknowledges Roger in his clown costume. Just gives a slight nod. That's where we ended last episode. Damn, and we clowns. Pick up right there. You guys are in this garden. You can see about the size of Washington Square Park. On the other side of the park, you're now nearing, getting close to the center. And on the far side of it from where you started are large gates that enter into the palace that you see rising up above and behind. What do you do?
What's the little clown doing? I want to keep an eye on him.
What's the little clown?
He's screaming.
The little clown gives this barely perceptible nod to Roger. You might notice it, Bobby. You might not. But then it returns to entertaining. The clown is just sort of dancing. It has a little music box that's playing a dirge. Oh, and it is dancing and entertaining four guests. You can see roaming the gardens are very well-dressed people in all sorts of costumes, you could say. But mainly, the variance lies in their masks. Most people are in some sort of 17th to 19th century fancy party garb, whether that be dresses, tuxedos, whatever, finely dressed, but they're wearing a variance of masks. Anything you can imagine is covered by these masks that they're wearing, and they walk among the gardens, laughing, talking, flitting about. And slowly you could see most making their way towards the gates. In fact, a small line is forming at the gates as each time they arrive, you get the sense that they're being checked before they go in. And that might be creating a little bit of a line, but other people are not in a hurry to get up there. And they're just walking around and enjoying the gardens. Remember, it is also evening. This is all lit by the moonlight of double moons. So it's actually kind of bright with the two moons, but it is night. And the clown is entertaining. Some people have stopped and are laughing. Look at him. God.
Well, we all have invites, so I guess any of us can walk up first. I wanted to find a way to conceal my weapon.
Oh, right. We have to give up our weapons.
Well, I'm not giving mine up. Fuck that. You know what? I'm just going to stick it down, like, the front of the pants. in the underwear.
I'm sorry, the pants?
In my underwear.
The underwear.
Underwear.
Okay.
Hoping that they're not going to do, like, a body cavity check.
Strip search.
I'm sorry.
I'm not putting it up.
I was going to say, so those are two different things. You put it in your underwear or you put it in a body cavity.
No, I'm just saying, okay. I'm hoping they're not going to do like a full like
pat down.
Yeah, they're just going to say like, can I check your bag, you know, or whatever. This isn't Madison Square Garden. It's Washington Square Park. Am I right?
Am I right? All right, so Vicky tucks the handgun. Anybody else do anything else before you're approaching here in this moment?
I was going to say, I'd like to keep my shotguns in my pants. I got big baggy pants.
It's clown pants.
And if anybody questions me, I'll be like, pants? Oh, I didn't know I couldn't do this. Was that not cool to bring shotguns? It's part of my act.
Isn't that cool?
God, what did we say last week?
About,
what was the joke?
Oh, what, Baroque?
No, there was the shotgun. It was part of my act. That was the joke last week. What was the
I'm the shotgun clown.
of the shotgun clown.
Balloon animal shotgun.
Hi, everybody.
The kids love it.
Hi, kids.
Did you guys have morning clowns where you grew up? Did you have like a morning show hosted by a clown, a local show?
Oh God!
Yep. What was the name of your clown?
Bozo.
Mine was Bozo. Yeah.
God no.
It was a syndicated.
Bozo was national. Yeah.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Bozo the clown.
Did you have a special private clown?
We had a private clown. We had a regional clown, Blinky. Blinky the clown.
Wow.
Blinky. Hosted a daily thing.
Yeah.
And on your birthday, you send in $5, and he'd read your name.
Yeah, we had a local regional clown. His name was Bozo, and he was he'd do these like public access like.
Oh, so he was like a licensed clown.
Yes,
he was, like, he's a franchise. Okay, right.
Talking about totally under the table clowns here.
Talking about your clown and my clown are not the same.
Proprietary clowns. This is a different story.
It's undocumented clowns completely.
Not important.
Sorry. That's great.
Are you guys talking to each other at all? Or are you in complete silence as you walk through the gardens?
Well, I think Bobby is just like totally taking on this role of the colonel and is like just like focused on getting inside the palace. Like that's his main goal. Like he's even just like kind of ignoring everybody the rest of the team, just focused on getting in there, and he's like rigid, ready to go. He's ready to relinquish his sword even. He's ready to go. He wants in.
Okay.
After Vicky tucks her gun in, she does want to walk up to the clown.
Which one?
Not Roger. Now I gotta say this the whole night.
Excited for the
party. Roger.
The tiny clown. Is this clown a I can't remember from the last episode, sorry. Is it a puppet or is it just, it seems like a little clown?
You walk up to the clown.
I walk up to the clown.
God, it's the stuff of nightmares.
As you get up close to it, it's dancing in these kind of strange, herky-jerky motions, and you don't see any strings. You don't see any hint that it's marionette, but it is a little bit difficult considering how heavily costumed it is and face-painted and everything like that, so it does make it harder, but you don't see any strings.
Could be clockwork.
Yeah, could be.
Vicky walks up and she's going to look at it closely and she's going to say quietly, but to the clown, Henri?
And it keeps dancing. Stops, looks at you, tilts its head slightly to the side, stares a little long in your direction, and then keeps dancing.
And Vicky
gives you no response, makes no sound.
Ugh. Vicky just almost laughs like a chortle as she recalls fucking Henri Goes to the Park, which was the book they were reading in the library about the clown in the park, which was this fucking clown. And she's just kind of like laughing, and it almost seems like she's with that group of people like laughing at this clown, like performing.
And then like as you start laughing, it starts to jerk a little bit more and like pick up its dance, like, hey, like it starts to get this like extra energy, like it's feeding off of you or something. And then it just sort of like stops and goes like, puts out a hand to you, and like out from underneath its sleeve comes a little red rose. And it just like holds it up to you. And then urges you to take it by kind of like waving it for a second out to you.
Shoot.
Vicky does like a royal like curtsy as she in her like little gown, and she reaches her hand out and plucks the rose from the clown.
And the clown bows deeply to the ground and then comes back up and just like starts to dance again.
Is this flower real?
Do you actually smell it?
Oh my God.
Do you put the flower in your mouth?
I look at it. I'm just
it
looking.
It appears real when you look at it. Yeah.
Just touching the petal. Does it feel real?
Oh. What check is that?
Pedal check?
Pedal check.
Pedal check?
Roll a pedal check.
The hell do you know about flowers?
Hey! That's true. I mean, I live in New York. I don't know. Can I do like a alertness? No, search? I don't know.
Search, yeah.
Search? I don't know.
Science botany.
Fuck off. Yeah. I don't know. Forensic? Forensic? I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, there's no flower
I don't have
check.
Any botany skills.
Botany.
Yeah, all right, give me a search. You're just touching it. It's the only sense you are using.
Ooh, 43 under 57.
Feels real.
I sniff it.
Okay, give me a con times 5 roll.
Oh, shit. Oh, God. You should have shot the little clown.
You should have shot the clown. You should have shot the clown. Oh, no. Oh, no. 97 over 65.
Okay. This scent, whatever shoots like up, in your mind, you smell this flower and it's just like, and in a moment, like, you feel as if everything around you shifts and changes. And give me a pal times 5 roll.
Okay.
Wow.
Oh my, that's impossible. Impossible. Landscape. I rolled another 97 wow. over 65. Whoa.
Another 97 over 65?
Dice loaded on 97.
Yeah. Yes. They are.
Decide just to roll 97.
I'm picking up different dice for later. Fuck those dice.
They are loaded towards 97. Okay. So you sniff, and as you open your eyes, you have been transported completely. There is no garden. There is no clown. There is no park. You are standing in a small apartment, and you're holding a rose, and you've just sniffed it, and you open up your eyes, and you are fully aware of the reality that you are in, because it is 1995, and you are living in a small apartment, and Christopher is standing in front of you, and he is just given you a flower and is eager to head out. You know that you're heading out on a date. It's your third date, and he has brought this flower, and he's just grabbing, like, his keys and stuff like that, like putting stuff in his pocket. And it's like, you ready to go? And at once, you are living both lives. You know you are there, fully present in that moment. But when you smelled the flower he gave you, you saw yourself in a park with a clown, with these strangers that you don't know, and like these people dressed like in the Renaissance everywhere around you. Give me a sanity check.
What? Oh my God.
Dude.
Oh my God.
Nobody sniff anything.
Stop sniffing things.
Oh my God.
Nobody sniff nothing.
57 over 32.
Oh shit.
Okay.
I'm so insane.
You truly have lost the grasp of where you are or when you are or who you are. Oh my God. You take 6 points of sanity damage.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh no.
We haven't even gotten the balance yet.
Max San Dam.
Oh,
San
Dam.
Max San Dam. I got to write that down for a future character name.
Max San Dam. Dam.
Max San Dam.
All right. Well. Fuck. I hit my breaking point.
Yeah, so no actual psychological effects happen right now, but note the breaking point. So that's 2 breaking points you've hit since leaving the hotel, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Or being in the hotel.
That's my second one.
Okay, so just make a note that it's your second one, but you have no particular psychological effects. Christopher is just like, are you ready? What's the matter?
She's like holding the flower.
You hear music. You hear the music from the music box of the clown playing in your apartment.
My God. She's like, I'm I don't know, just a long I think a long day today. I don't know. I'm ready. And she like tucks the flower into her little purse. And she walks towards Christopher.
And he lets you pass by and lets you walk past him. Out into the hallway, and he's going to close the door behind you.
She says, wait, I forgot my lipstick. She's going to come back into the room. And she's just going to stand there for a second, because now she's just like, is there something on in the apartment? Like, did I leave some, like... So she's going to walk back in. Wait, does she hear the music?
You hear the music, and it seems to be coming from your bedroom.
She's going to walk in there. Yeah, she just follows it for a second.
You walk into your bedroom. You continue to hear the music, but now it sounds like it's in the living room. It's like a fire alarm that's, or a like an, you know, like a, when your smoke alarm battery is low and like you can't, you're like, where's that coming from? You walk in this room and it sounds like it's in the other room, but there's your lipstick. You see it just sitting on your bureau.
Oh, she just like shakes it off. And in her head, she's also thinking like, I need a drink. Well, I shouldn't have a drink, but I want a drink. But, and she just is grabbing the lipstick.
And then back to the living room.
Yeah.
You grab the lipstick. You walk back out into the living room, and you see sitting on your kitchen counter is a piece of paper, a note that was not there before. You can see very easily and very quickly at the top of it, it says, "To V, my queen." And there's a shadow swinging over the letter. And as you turn to the right, you see Christopher hanging by his neck in the middle of your living room, dead. He's killed himself. And now we come back to the garden, and Vicky collapses to the ground. You see her smells the flower, and all you guys see is she collapses down to the ground. And that is your 6 points of sanity damage.
Oh, wow. My God.
Oh, shit.
I'm unconscious.
I think Roger would, seeing her go to the ground, would go towards her and lift her head up.
Yeah, as soon as you lift her head up, you start to like come out of it. And I mean, you just saw this in your apartment. I mean, this man who you just started dating, like bizarrely killed himself in your apartment. And like you, and now you're here and you like, oh my God.
Yeah.
6 points of sanity damage, Roger. And Roger's a fucking clown. And he is what wakes you up out
of
this.
Wake up.
So hey.
What's the matter? What's the matter? Why are you freaking out?
Calm down.
Relax.
He's just kind of like gently slapping her on the cheek. Vic.
Hey. And I think when she comes to, she's like absolute, like when you wake somebody up from a nightmare, she is absolutely freaking out, jerking her body, like pushing you away. She's breathing hard. She's like not screaming because her throat feels really, really dry. She just like is panicky and trying to like wriggle out of your arms, Roger's arms.
And he's like, it's cool. Hey. It's been a while since I had to pick you up off the floor of a party. It's all right.
It's not. Christopher.
No. He's dead. It's Roger.
My God.
My God. It's Roger the shotgun clown.
And I think Vicky just like starts like wanting to cry, but she can't even like produce the tears because she's so fucking confused. So she's just kind of like dry crying in a way where she's like breathing and trying to catch her breath. And she slowly stands back up with the help of Roger. And she's like, it was 1995, right? I saw Christopher hung him.
Listen, you're making a scene.
There's all these people looking at you in their masks.
Don't touch anything. Pull it together. Everything's been leading up to this. Gotta stay in control. You're driving the car.
I'm driving the car. And she feels like herself. I'm here, okay? She feels her gun in her crotch. Gun's there. She feels her face. Her porcelain mask is askew. She turns it.
And Roger starts to go through with her the, like, panic attack calm down that he did with her 20 years ago when she ran out of the McAllister building and sat on the steps. Like, counting her breathing, holding the breath in. He just, like, repeats it verbatim with her.
And you guys are on the steps outside of the McAllister. And it's that scene is replaying again, but both of you feel as if you're there and in this garden, in another worldly garden at the same time.
I think that actually gives Vicky comfort. It was like the first time Roger showed that he really cared and spent time with her, and she does calm down in this moment and in that simultaneously in the same way that he helped her back then. Okay. I'm okay. I'm ready. She looks back at Neil and Bobby. It's like tears. She looks pale as fucking shit. Are they ready?
Bobby's just watching this whole thing, just stone-faced, and he just goes, "Are you done? We have a mission to complete."
Samurai mask. Katana. Are you done?
Turns back towards the line. Let's go.
Neil.
Bert. Neil kind of cocks his head at her, wondering, because it's like the power that he had as a surgeon sort of pales in comparison to the power that he feels now
as
like
an artist
slash, you know, manipulator of reality. So, like, he thought for a second, he's just like, wondering if he should go up and check on her medically. But instead, he turns around and he sort of like lifts his hands up to the sky, and he's going to try to manifest a soundtrack. The score from Dances with Wolves, the John Barry score. He's going to manifest it all around us.
Okay, give me a sanity roll. Sanity check.
We need theme music.
Yeah, 84.
There you go. This music begins playing. Perhaps it's like coming from the music box of the clown. It's like the track changed, and now it is this. I don't remember that theme. I'm sure I'd recognize it if I heard it. But it's a symphony, right? Like a score.
It's like Aaron Copland style, kind of like symphonic. Yeah.
Okay. Soothing. Da, da, beautiful. Da, 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 da. Awesome. And Vicky's starting to feel better. Roger's starting to get her better. Bobby's like, are we doing this or what? And do you start walking up to the gates, Bobby?
Yes.
As you cross out of the middle of Washington Square Park and walk the block or so that it takes you to get to the gates, you now see that there is a small line, just a few people, and there are guards. The guards are wearing these beautiful red jackets with gold piping along the shoulders, with golden, with bronze or gold buttons down the front, and they all wear golden lion masks. And there's three of them, and they stand at the front gate. They have a revolver in a holster at their side, and each holds a ceremonial slash could actually do some shit halberd, like 7-foot halberd. Huh. And they're just standing there, and as people come up, you see that they are requesting invitations and doing pat downs.
Fuck.
Do you continue to walk up, Bobby?
Yes. He walks up straight backed, straight up to the guys.
Okay. Takes just a couple minutes, but eventually you get there. And this masked guard looks across at you and just says, "Invitation, please."
Bobby produces his, hands it straight up.
Pulls it out, takes a look at it. Colonel William Walford. He's saying under his mask.
Correct.
Slowly hands it back. Welcome.
Thank you.
Your weapon, is it real?
It is. And he undoes the buckle, very ceremoniously holds it up in front of him.
He holds his hands out, takes it, turns to the guard, and says, turns to the guard next to him, and says, "Tie, please." And this guy pulls something out of his back, like a pouch that he has on his back, and he does this quick little like leather strap thing that has some sort of like locking mechanism on it that's really hard to explain, but it basically wraps it just around the tip of the hilt where it meets the sheath and ties it so that it is not able to be pulled out. And then he hands it back to you. This is part of your costume, but it must remain peace tied.
Very well. Ties it back up.
And, enjoy the party, sir. And he steps to the side.
He steps through.
Bobby starts to walk up. Who is next? Or are people just leaving and running away?
I'm going to walk up. I have nothing to hide.
You have nothing,
Neil has
to,
nothing
hide.
To hide. Yeah, he confidently strides up, flips out his invitation.
A brief pat down. Excuse me, sir. Boop, boop, boop. Thank you. Enjoy the party, Neil. And you walk past. Who's next?
I'm going to adjust my gun. I'm going to... Speaking of parties and like party tricks, this was a party trick people used to do to get like into clubs or like on a party bus where they didn't know you had alcohol. You'd put it in a small water bottle and then you wouldn't put it like up, but you would squeeze it like between your thighs and just walk, you know, it's kind of slow. And then they would pat you down and it would be right in between your legs. So she is going
to... So unless they ran all the way up.
Yeah, unless they spread your legs inappropriately. Mm-hmm. And she's wearing a big poofy, you know, this is like a Renaissance dress.
Of course.
So she's going to adjust it between her thighs and then very demurely walk up, saunter. She's doing a shake.
Barely moving her feet apart from each other.
Very demure.
This is,
very
and she'll
thoughtful.
Say, this is how they walked back then. This is how they walked back then.
She's just saying that to the air.
This is how they walked
to herself.
This is what they did. Hello.
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 You walk up. Good evening, ma'am. Your invitation?
Pulls it from her bosom.
Sees it. Victoria Ricci. Excuse me, ma'am. We'll have to pat you down for weapons. And now I need a stealth check. Plus 20%.
Okay.
Taking some good moves here, but so plus 20%.
Okay. Oh, no problem. Oh, 20. Oh, fuck. Even with the 20, that would be 34, and I got a 43. If only that was reversed.
So you got a 43 over 34.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're patting you down. And Jesus here, dunk, as it falls out from between your legs and hits the ground just under your skirt. Guys, guard steps back. What is that, ma'am?
Vicky, like...
Sorry, ma'am, could you please take one step back?
Yeah, she tries to slide it with her foot. She takes a step. Slides it.
Okay, give me a stealth check at minus 40%.
Minus
Joe!
I mean, it's ridiculous. I just heard something land there.
Fine.
I can't, but also, like, even if you're successful, I'm trying to move things along because I'm thinking, what if it's successful?
Yeah.
Then what do?
Yeah.
You still have to get it, right?
Fine.
Right? So
she very demurely slides her skirt over the top. She goes,
skirt to the side, and he... He looks down and he sees a gun.
Oh.
Like a modern handgun, a Glock. Just sitting on the ground between your legs. And she goes,
How strange.
Oh. It's the sound, what's her face makes in the Titanic when she throws the necklace. She goes,
How curious. And he says,
how curious.
I'm sorry, ma'am. No guns allowed. And he bends down, picks up the gun, turns to the third guard, and he says, gun. Hands it over. The guard, like, literally puts it into, like, a small, like, a barrel thing, and just, like, does something that you don't see, and then literally turns around with a ticket and gives it to the other guard. And the guard is like, you can pick this up on the way out.
And she takes like, it.
Completely calm, completely cool. Doesn't think it's weird at all that you tried to bring a gun in here between your legs. Makes no mention of it as something odd. It's like he's just checking your coat. That's the vibe.
She puts it in her bosom.
And he's like, enjoy the party, ma'am.
And Vicky nods. And she'll like shoot Roger a look, and then she walks in.
Roger walks up, and this guard, I mean, he has a mask on, so it's kind of hard to tell, but if you just see through the holes like into his eyes are saying, what the fuck?
Roger
is
has
this dude's deal.
Two shotguns, one in each pant leg, two handguns in his back of his underwear, and he shifts a grenade between the top of his ball sack and the underside of his penis. Just holding it there.
So his penis is laying on top of an active grenade.
That sounds uncomfortable.
Yeah. He's like, at least I'll get this through. And he's just like, holding it there with all his might. Okay.
They
and
come
he
up.
Comes up and he's like,
invitation, please, sir.
Here you are. I noticed you were patting people down. I don't like to be touched. I'm a veteran, and I saw some shit. And if I'm touched, I might have a episode. I assure you, nothing about me is real.
He turns and like looks at the other guards. Give me a persuade roll.
Oh, Roger's got yes. Amazing persuade for a guy with a 5 charisma. All right, 21%.
Oh boy,
better than I thought.
Well, it's not bad.
Oh God, 72.
Nowhere close.
Nowhere close.
It's nowhere close. He hands the invitation back. He says, "Sorry, sir. It is policy." No weapons allowed. We just need to do a brief pat down, and I'll be very gentle.
So I'll use
very quick
stealth as I let go.
He sees how big you are. He's a little bit frightened at the prospect, and so he's going to very lightly go through this. So go ahead and add 20% to your stealth. Actually, do not add 20% to your stealth for the shotguns. You can add 20% to your stealth for the handguns and the nade.
All right.
Which the we don't need to describe again where it
is. Vicky is fuming.
I made it both ways with one roll.
You made it both ways. Yeah. So he's touching you gently and he feels these shotguns, but perhaps it thinks it's some sort of stilt or something because it runs straight down the length of both legs. And whatever it is about, that this guy's checking him just like taking it easy, he does not detect your weapons and he steps aside. Enjoy the party, sir.
Don't skip leg day.
And Roger walks up with a grenade tucked into his crotch. Up these grand steps. You're now joining Vicky and Bobby and Neil as you go up these steps into a grand entrance. Very quickly after walking into this entrance, you start to hear the sounds of music. Music pouring out from within. Music that obviously is denoting this party. And Roger, as the last one in, we see this from his perspective. The clown steps into the room, last of the four of you. And you see a brief, very brief vestibule before, and you can see this plush gorgeous purple carpeting and these extremely ornamented and adorned walls with artwork of strange figures in suits and dresses, just sort of like
captured on the wall, but it's only a brief vestibule, maybe 20, 30 feet wide before you go into another very large, maybe four wide, like two double door entrance into the central area of the masquerade, the ballroom. As all four of you cross over into it, you see a massive room filled with at the least hundreds and hundreds of people crammed in, even into this massive space. You see the Baroque stylings of a Gothic ballroom with huge high ceilings, 40 foot plus ceilings, with paintings all over the ceilings, giant golden and crystal chandeliers coming and hanging down from them, huge pieces of artwork on the far walls that you can see in the distance, and all the way at the back, rising above everything else, is a dais with four people sitting on it. Two women to the left, two men to the right, at some sort of a head table, as it were. And in the center of that table, empty at the moment, is a large golden throne. We're going to take a quick break.
God.
And come right back as we have entered the party proper. Stay with us. Welcome back. The party has begun. It has begun. All four of you have stepped through the threshold to enter the ballroom itself. Music playing over the din of conversation that you hear everywhere. This ballroom is massive and packed, wall to wall. All kinds of gowns and dresses and tuxedos and costumes and masks everywhere. No one is without a mask. I described the chandeliers, the artwork, the head table, the throne far in the distance in the back of the room. It is quite overwhelming, and within seconds of stepping through, you are inundated with the sensory overload of everything that is happening right now, and also everything that brought you here, and what possible means exist within this scene of essential madness for you to escape or help anything. So I need everybody to give me an intelligence times 5 roll, please.
Oh dear.
27 under 85.
Ooh. Nice.
Fail.
34 under 60.
67 9, over 9, 40. 5
over 65.
Oh. Ooh.
All right, so Vicky failed.
Yeah.
And
back.
Roger?
I failed. 67 over 40.
Okay. Vicky and Roger, both of you are thinking Pathfinder terms, honestly. You are fascinated. Yeah. So you immediately become dumbfounded by what you're seeing and sort of unable to move or advance into the party. You're just so overwhelmed by everything that you're seeing. Neil, Bobby, you succeeded as well, right?
Yeah, 34.
Neil, Bobby, you keep your head about you and you recognize what's happening here is there is an effect that is beyond just the natural sensory input of all the colors and the music and the feel of all these people rushing by you or moving past you or dancing around you. And you recognize that there is some additional effect happening here that is creating a malaise, a puppetry of people that are within it. And you are able to shake it off relatively quickly. You see, Neil, that Vicky and Roger seem a little bit dumbfounded and slack-jawed in the moment and seem almost frozen in time.
I think I'm just going to start. I'm going to making my way through the crowd.
Okay. Leaving Roger and Vicky behind, Neil starts disappearing into the mass of people. Bobby, do you do anything seeing Roger and Vicky?
I feel like as Neil leaves, he's just like, he says to him, "We will be here, Your Highness." And like kind of gives a short bow as he walks off.
As Neil leaves?
Yeah, as Neil leaves. And then he looks to Bobby and, to Vicky and Roger. He says, "Get it together. Get it together. We need you." Are they responding?
As soon as you hear Bobby's voice, it snaps you out of it, Roger. And you realize like that Vicky is still kind of like stunned.
"Hey, Roger. Snap out of it. There's a glamour happening here. Need to focus.
You know, I'm gonna dance.
I'm here."
Vicky just starts like walking.
She starts to move into the crowd and seems to have lost all purpose of what you all are doing here. Now, you all have really seemed to go your separate ways as individuals. There doesn't really seem to be any party dynamic anymore in terms of like, you don't have a plan. And so it's not strange that Neil just walks into the party and that Vicky just sort of strolls into the party. And you two can do whatever you want. So you let me know. Vicky, I'm going to say you start walking in and you just begin getting caught up in a particular dance that's happening in one area of the ballroom where these ladies are sort of like moving around in an inner circle while men are dancing around the outside of it beside them in a very formulaic way, and you like know the dance.
Oh no. Yeah, I mean, she's gonna start doing it.
All right, so Roger, you see her move into the crowd and just like start dancing, and with the mask and everything, you could lose her very quickly.
He's still like in shock, and he's kind of coming through and he sees her dancing, and he just kind of like reaches out a hand towards her absentmindedly and just lets her go, and then just kind of walks off in another direction.
Okay.
See Vicky twirl into the crowd.
So Vicky is twirling, Vicky is dancing. Roger, as you walk off, Bobby, you see him walk off into the crowd and just let Vicky go. What do you do?
Bobby's instinct is to stand by the, or head to the throne and stand by the right hand of the king. That's where he feels he belongs.
Okay. You see, this is some distance away across a mass, a throng of people. And you start moving along through this area. Roger, very early on, you can see as you move off to the side, there is a little crowd gathering in the distance around what looks like an old woman. And she is sitting at a small table that's pushed up against the corner of the room. She's dressed all in black, and she seems to be giving tarot card readings in the corner to a small line of people. You see this. You also see through a mass of people off in the distance. As you're looking off in the distance through this mass of people, you start to hear some whispers. Give me an alertness roll.
68 under 86. Oh yeah,
so you are listening as well as looking, and while you are watching these people, you can hear the whispers of a couple, what sounds like a man and a woman having a conversation right near you, behind you, and the woman is like, "He should be here within the hour," and the man is like,
only within an hour? I'm not sure I'm ready. And she says, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. The king will love to see you. He should be here in an hour.
And you have this feeling after all that you've been through that being here in this space when the king arrives is a bad thing. And you can't quite explain it or put your finger on it, but you have an alertness that lets you know that there's an inherent danger to letting that happen if, in your mind, your goal is to escape. And so
it's kind of like the dance on the night floor. It's like once you go there, there's no coming back. He's kind of remembering that.
Exactly. And you feel like you're on a timer.
Is there a way to get out of this general area, a place where Roger feels like he's safe from that?
You start to move through the crowd searching for exits or side rooms or something like that, and we will cut away from you.
Okay.
We cut to Neil, who has walked deepest in and was the first to walk deeper into the party. Neil, is there anything in particular you're looking for, or are you just taking it all in as you move through?
Yeah, I'm really just kind of taking it in, getting a feel for what's happening here, and getting closer and closer to the throne.
Okay, so you're just moving through, getting a feel for everything, when suddenly a small, petite woman comes moving through the crowd and lets out like a guttural sort of gasp beneath a mask that looks like a raven. It's like a raven mask. And this woman in this gown is just like, makes this sound and just pushes through a couple people. She's small enough to like make that work. And she slides up in front of you and grabs your two arms, your upper arms, just above your elbow. She grabs your two arms and her eyes are wide. You can just see barely through the mask as she looks up at you. And she's like, and she's like in stunned silence for a moment.
And I just look at her and I say, unhand me.
And she lifts her hands off of your arms. And she says, Neil. It can't be. Is it you? And you recognize the voice and the countenance of Fran. Your friend who was lost many years ago to your memory. Back in 2007, she was found dead of an overdose in a parking lot, an Arby's parking lot.
Yeah.
In Illinois, I think it was.
Oh my God.
And she is at this party. How did you get here? She's kind of whispering under her breath, this mask between the two of you.
And he's kind of shaken out of his, shocked out of his illusion for a moment by this. He's genuinely surprised. He's like, what happened to you?
I don't know, but I've come to the party. I've made it. And I feel as if I must meet the king. Why are you here? Why have you come?
And kind of re-enters his state. He draws himself up. He like taps his cane down on the ground. He says, I am the king. And he holds out his other hand. He says, come.
Wow. She reaches out a hand, takes yours, and you start walking her like closer to the throne. And let's go to Bobby. Bobby, you are moving through the crowd, and you...
He's headed towards the throne. He's just going to stand by, like, as a, almost like the king's guard, basically.
Yeah, you're just behind Neil. Takes a while to work through this crowd, but you also begin to hear these vague whispers of anticipation. The king's arrival. He's coming soon. He'll be here soon, they say. And does this have any effect or impact on you at all?
I mean, no. He's just focused. He already anticipates the king's arrival, too. So he's just kind of like...
He's looking forward to the king's arrival.
Yeah, he's like, this is my mission. He's like, I am here to stand at the right hand of the king.
So you believe his mission is to be...
Be like
a guard for the king.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
As the colonel.
As the colonel.
Mm-hmm.
As the colonel. As the colonel. You're walking through this military garb on, and you, this young man starts backing up and bumps into you as you're walking. He was a part of a dance, and he sort of like breaks out of the revelry for a moment and turns to look at you. He's of a height with you, and he's wearing a white porcelain mask along the top, but the bottom, it does have a mask, but it's like black with these like over-exaggerated teeth lines that come over it, and it's like a witch doctor mask. And he has this costume on underneath it that these strange, like, torn fabrics that are rolling over one another. And he stops and stares at you, like, almost in shock. And he puts his hands down at his side, and he seems to straighten. And he's like, Colonel? Sir? And... It sounds a little bit strange to you, but you recognize your own voice.
What? So, okay.
It sounds like it's you.
Oh. Okay. Okay. So, Bobby just goes, name and rank, soldier.
It's me.
And he looks around to the side. It's me, Dad. Bobby.
How did you get through? How did you make it past the fort?
What?
What? Give me a sanity check.
What?
What?
Answer yourself.
What the fuck? Oh, God, that's terrible. 89 over very, very, very low. It was like 22.
You You take 1 point of sanity damage.
Oh.
What is everybody's sanity at right now? Let's do a quick check-in.
It's been
a
while. Not good.
Roger's at 58.
And all we've done is lose. 58?
Yeah, it doesn't even seem right, but I use the same form every week.
Okay. I'm at 21 right now.
21.
I'm at 27.
Oh my God.
I'm at 20.
And at 20. Yeah, yours all seem right, though I don't remember a ton of instances of Roger losing big chunks of sanity.
And I kept pushing it off to Steve.
Poor Steve.
Steve's dead.
Yeah, I haven't pushed any. Maybe I should have pushed my last one. I'll remember it next time.
Yeah, so perhaps it is right. Perhaps it is right. We'll see. But yeah, Bobby, you take a point of sanity damage. How does it manifest in this moment when he says, it's me, Dad?
Sorry, Joe, you know why I think it's correct? Is at one point I got like 10 sanity back from something.
Right. So you guys definitely recovered.
I was like at a breaking point and I went back up. So
I remember that.
It's definitely possible.
Yeah.
Also, it's like, it's just tricky when you're that high. It's hard to lose any. And
used to be there.
And you used to be there, but then it's like, you know, it snowballs. It gets harder and harder and harder to pass those checks. What is your reaction in this moment as you're hearing this like flowery, happy music?
His mind is splitting because he was so sure that he was the colonel for a second, and then he hears what sounds like his own voice.
And calling he's referring him, to you as the colonel.
Yeah, calling him the colonel, but then it's like, wait a minute, am I the colonel? What, is that me? What is... He's like, I'm on a mission. He's trying to reconcile these two ideas in his head, that he was also Bobby, but he's now the colonel. And it's just, he's looking at, does it look like him? Does it look like Bobby? Mm-hmm. What he's like, okay.
Yeah, no, he's masked, but in terms of his physique, his size, like, it's like looking in a mirror.
He's just looking and he's staring. He's
but you're like, behind this samurai mask.
Yeah.
He's behind this witch doctor mask.
God. He's just like this isn't right. You're not supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be here. You're not supposed to be here.
I'm sorry, Colonel.
Don't give me your excuses. You just get in line. Do what you're told.
You're acting like your father right back at you.
Yeah.
It's so heartbreaking.
The cycle continues.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he looks, you know, sort of like taken aback, but unsurprised. He stiffens his form and says, "Yes, sir." And kind of turns to the side to leave. And then he's like frozen in place for a moment. If you follow his eyes, you see that he looks across and you see the unmistakable, enormous form of Roger Cumstone moving through the crowd. And you see that Bobby stopped and is frozen, staring at this clown. And he starts to like back away in fear. And then he just starts to like hide and slips off into the crowd as far away from Roger as he can move. Let's go to Vicky.
Can I Vicky. Do a check to like get out of this?
All right, what's better? Alertness or POW times 5? What's better?
Let's see. My POW times 5 is marginally better.
Okay. Give me a POW times 5 roll.
Yeah, I think trying to get out of this game-wise, you know, she's like dancing and spinning and like seeing the faces of these different people, and she's starting to get like sick, like nauseous, sick to her stomach, and maybe she's imagining seeing faces of people she knows. Maybe she is seeing faces of people she knows. Let's see if she can end this charade. Oh, yes, 39 under 65.
Okay, as you're moving through the crowd and you're doing the choreographed dance and you're, you know, holding this gentleman's hand and moving past and across, as you come through one twirl, lost in the moment, you see parting through the crowd what looks like a man in a tuxedo, carrying a briefcase, and you see him from behind, and it's unmistakable. It brings you right back to the night floors, and he disappears in between some people moving toward the throne.
Just like literally as if it is like the night floors also happening, that moment also happening at the same exact time. From the dance, she just starts like sprinting, like just from a standstill to a sprint after this guy, just like she did in the night floors.
Well, you really can't sprint. It's packed with people shoulder to shoulder everywhere. So you're just like pushing people aside. Take it easy, lady. All right. You start pushing through the crowd, looking for this man with a briefcase. You see no sign of him, but you know he went in this direction. You're moving slowly, you know, toward the throne, but toward the left side of the throne as Neil is moving up the center. Bobby's moving toward the right side of the throne. Roger is a little bit back in the distance over near Bobby's side, and you start parting through these people and you become frozen as you see off to the stage right side of the throne, the left side as you're looking at it, maybe 10 or 15 feet away from the
wing of that table, that raised dais table, and the side, you see a woman in a blue dress with a cat mask. And she's talking to a young man, also in a mask, but this is like a, it looks like a turtle mask. And you would recognize anywhere the, you know, the physical form of Sam.
Oh, shit.
All right.
And she's standing there just chatting away, giggling and laughing.
Fuck you! Mickey just changes direction and starts like, hard elbowing, like you're, when you're trying to get through a crowd. She is like elbowing people and saying,
she's in the mosh pit.
Samuel! Sam! And like screaming his name.
All right, so you start screaming, Sam! Samuel! And all around the throne, Neil, you can start to see this now. Bobby, you can start to see this now. Roger, you get a little bit.
Do you think I hear her saying Sam as I'm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You can hear it over the din across the other side of the of the cross where the throne is. And you all can see now that there is a ring of red-coated golden lion-masked guards all around the base of the head table. And as soon as you start screaming and elbowing people and they start going, oh, 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 and, you know, pushing them out of the way and causing a ruckus, immediately two guards peel off from that and just start walking up to you. They've got sidearms. These ones do not have halberds, but they have these like white gloves on, and they come walking up to you, and they're like, you know, you just hear these voices coming through the masks, and they're like, is there a problem here? And they're like stepping up in front of you, putting their hands up between you and your son.
Vicky calms down, obviously, in the presence of authority. She herself is an agent of the law.
I'm a federal agent.
I'm a federal agent.
I show them my badge. She says, I'm just trying to get to my son. It's too crowded in here. I'm just trying to get to my son. Could you escort me, please?
Of course, ma'am. Please move quietly and quickly.
Yes.
Or peacefully, I should say.
Yes.
And which one? Who is your son?
He's talking to Abigail.
This masked man turns.
He's talking to Abigail.
Yes, please. Go ahead. And they step aside out of your way and let you move forward as long as you don't cause any trouble.
Don't cause any trouble.
You see the two of them have turned and looked at you. Abigail and Sam, and you guys all hear this, see this brief commotion, might break you out of like whatever you were doing a moment ago, and you start walking toward them, and Sam is like, Mom? What are you doing here?
Sam, come here, and she's just like
and
trying.
And he walks up to you.
Oh, she just hugs him. She hugs him. Oh. She sniffs his hair.
And smells like him and feels like him. And he hugs you back. And he just kind of says in your ear, how did you get in here?
I was trying to find you. She's holding his face and she wants to try to like lift up his mask to see his face.
Mom. And he kind of like pushes you off of his face. Like his mask is a little cockeyed and he straightens it again. And slowly, Abigail walks up behind him. Abigail, right! In this cat mask. She walks up next to him, and you see her ever so delicately slip her arm under his and just kind of like hold it close to her as she almost like nuzzles up against him. And she smiles at you. And Sam's like, Mom, I want you to meet Abby. This is Abby. She's my friend.
Oh. And he has like a conspiratorial smile.
Ooh.
What do you do?
What do I do? I don't know.
I don't know.
Vicky says, Abby and I actually know each other. And she looks at Abigail.
And she gives you this, like, kind of this weird, bland smile. She just smiles at you, and Sam looks back and forth. You know each other? And Abigail's like, I've heard of her. We've never met in person.
Oh, cool.
I was, she like is trying to look away from Abigail, but also like, it's crazy seeing her. She looks back at Sam. I worked on a case. Abigail went missing and I had to find her. And now I did.
Mission accomplished, she says, smiling. I'm so glad you've come. Perhaps we could speak for a moment? And she, like, lays a hand gently on Sam's shoulder, lovingly. Oh. She says, could I just speak with your mom for a moment? Just the two of us. Just the girls. And he's like, yeah, sure. And he steps back, and you see that he's sort of, he's looking like a grown man in this atmosphere, especially with a mask on, but you know him to be a boy, right? I mean, he's just started college, but he, in this scene, looks just like everybody else. She slips her arm out from him and beckons you, like, off to the side.
Abby is banging your baby boy.
What are you going to do?
So Vicky's going to follow Abby, but first she's going to hug Sam again, bring him in close, and she's going to whisper in his ear, Roger is here. He's dressed as a giant clown.
The most horrifying phrase anyone can hear.
What?
I know. It sounds... I know. He's dressed as a clown. Find him. Find him. I love you. I love you, Sam. Find Roger, okay? I love you. And
Sam, he just starts looking around in this strange turtle mask. He's looking around.
And she looks again at him and she's like, find Roger.
Yeah, Mom, I heard you.
Now, Sam.
Why are you freaking out?
Just do it, please.
Yeah, okay. And he starts to turn away from you. And you start walking over toward Abigail. Pulling the two of you aside, we'll cut off to the side with the two of you. And as you come over, she like maintains this smile and she says, did you bring it?
And Vicky nods.
Where is it?
I don't have it.
And her face changes, perplexed for a moment after what you just said, that you brought it.
One of us does.
Who?
Murnau.
And she turns, she glances off at, yes, go ahead.
And then Vicky wants to kind of snap her attention before she can wander off to go find it. And she says, you will help us get out of here. Because we brought it for you, right?
You brought it for you.
No, we brought it for you, Abigail.
I was just helping. I was simply giving you a way out.
Yes, right, the way out. We want to get out of here.
You should. That's why you need the bottle.
So what is the next step once you have it? What do we do?
Once I have it? No. Once you have it, you have to get it from Murnau and give it to J.C. Lintz. And she smiles again.
No, I thought you wanted his bottle. I don't know what J.C. Lintz is.
Oh, he's around here somewhere. He carries a rather bulky briefcase. You'll recognize him. Deliver it to him, and you can go.
Why?
Because if you don't, we're all staying. And not just Sam and I.
I looked for you for so long. I looked for you for so long. And now that I found you, I wish you were dead.
Don't say such things. Don't wish someone unhappiness simply because they want something different from you. I am where I've always wanted to be. I am where I belong. And I think Sam is coming with me.
I will kill you myself if you touch my son again.
Her smile doesn't break. She says, "You have no power in this place. I am allowed close to the king because I am close to the king."
She kind of like looks up at this throne that rises up above everyone. It's the centerpiece of the whole room.
He will be here soon. And if you are here when he arrives, you'll stay with us forever. So if you want to leave, and if you want Sam to go with you, give J.C. Lintz his bottle. And the way out will become clear.
And Vicky does like a courtly, deep curtsy.
Ha! Huh. A brief laugh escapes her lips. And she does the same. And curtsies back.
And Vicky's going to walk away. She needs to find Murnau now. She needs to find Murnau now. She walks away calmly and then starts like...
Roger, you are moving through the crowd and you see an unwitting young man just standing around looking, trying to search for someone. And you saw this whole conversation happen. As soon as that scream happened and you looked over to the side, you witnessed this whole thing. Now, you don't hear what they said over there, but you see Sam peel away and he's looking around.
And I'm trying to find a way out of this area so that I'll be safe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot. Yeah. So, yeah, you were trying to find a way out of this area.
I would say that I heard her and I probably watched this all go down. But like
right.
my
but I had forgotten.
Thing.
Yeah, your main objective was finding a way out. So give me a search roll.
Nah. 61 over 30.
All right, so you fail a search roll, and what you end up doing is along the sides of this ballroom, you see there are some openings and small hallways that go off into these little offshoots. As you peel off into these offshoots, you see there are like small side rooms, and you see like, and they're all filled with people, like just people everywhere. And they're like little sitting rooms where people are chatting, sitting around on couches and chairs, with drinks, cocktails, etc. And then there are, the rooms that you would see in a mansion, a sitting room, a library, a cigar and brandy room, whatever, right?
Like map room.
a game room, literally a game room, right? Cards and like
billiards.
Felt. Yeah, what is that? Why am I blanking on the game with Baccarat? Like Baccarat. Things. All right, so no evidence of
an actual way out. When you hear this, you look over, you see this conversation. Now you see Sam kind of like walking through the crowd. Looking around. Do you duck him or do you move to him?
No, he'll, realizing it doesn't seem like there's any place for him to go, he goes towards Sam.
Murray.
Okay.
Murray.
His head turns around as he hears Murray and he's like, Roger. And he walks up to you and he says, Mom said you were here. Why are you dressed like that? Steps back, like looks you up and down. I mean, it's a costume party, but it's not that kind of costume party.
He's just staring at him. It's like, how did you get here?
Well, I went to this party that Mom said that I shouldn't go to. But, you know, it's through this fraternity, and Abby was there. And she told me about this this amazing, she kind of knows this like royal family. She's connected in some way. And she told me about this grand ball and she asked me if I would go. And I was like, yeah. And so we met up at this hotel and then she took me here. I don't really remember how we got from the hotel to here. Actually, now that I think about it, it's kind of a blur. I just remember being here and the music starting.
The first party, what was that? What was the frat party? Where was that, on campus?
Yeah. Yeah, it was on campus.
And she was there at the frat?
Yeah.
Which frat was it? Give me the Greek letters.
It was Delta Gamma Delta.
Delta Gamma Delta?
Delta Gamma Delta. Cheesecake.
They're still around? I'm a Delta Gam myself.
Delta Gamma Cheesecake.
Oh man, I actually have this somewhere.
Delta.
Delta. This will be important later. Delta.
Delta. Come on.
Delta fucking Homo sapien. Yeah.
This was he gives you some Greek letters.
This was, I'm just putting you on the spot. This is a this was a party on campus, and Abby was in the building. Think, Murray. Think.
Yeah. I mean, I did a vodka luge. So I might be misremembering some details, but I think she was there.
The fuck's a vodka luge?
Oh, Dad. And then he like catches himself like, and like sort of shakes it off.
You gotta listen to me. Whatever's left of your brain needs to listen to me. This is a bad place, and Abby's a bad girl.
Oh, Abby's nice.
No.
You gotta meet her.
No.
You gotta meet her.
I have no interest in meeting her.
Oh, come on, man.
She's trouble.
You haven't even met her. How do you know that she's trouble?
Because we've been looking for her for decades.
What?
Murray, you know your mom and I work in a crazy business. This place is a part of that. You can't be here. We've got to get out.
And he like starts looking around like suspiciously. But she said she has to stay. She wants me to meet the king.
She can stay as long as she wants.
Roger.
The king is a piece of shit. The king is going to kill everyone here. Your life is at risk.
You sound real paranoid.
Not paranoid.
Man.
I was the one doing ice luges.
Ice luges. It's a vodka luge, Roger. God.
Whatever.
He starts looking around, you know, sort of suspiciously, and it's like, I mean, I don't want to go. Okay. All right. I don't want to go. He like acts like he's standing up to you.
puffs out his chest a little bit.
I think you're a tough guy now.
I think I can make my own decisions, yeah. Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, I mean, you were never around before. So suddenly now I have to start listening to what you say?
It was your mother's choice, not mine.
No. Well, I'm not going to be like you.
Cindy's like, what the fuck?
What the fuck? You know she drinks, right?
Oh my god!
Oh my god, that's terrible.
No! Don't go down that road, Roger.
Vicky standing with Abigail simultaneously is like, I should not have told Sam to go talk to Roger. Unsupervised.
You get all those presents I sent you every Christmas? Those chicks made out to your mom?
Oh my god. She's been hiding, just keeping all the Christmas presents?
Vicky, oh that god. Is messed up.
Oh my god. Yes, and...
Yes, and.
Yes, and. God damn it.
He's like, well, I'm not going to be like you two. Abby and I are, we're not going to be like you two. We're going to stay together. And it's not dangerous. And I'm going to meet the king. And he turns around and starts to walk back toward Abigail.
Roger puts his big meat paw on his shoulder and just holds him.
And he can feel how tight the grip is, and he doesn't make a sound. He just sort of like grits and bears it for a second. Back to you, Frozen.
Roger, let's go.
He lets go. Sam slowly turns to regard you. And then moves back off toward Abigail. Neil, you've arrived near the front. You see a series of guards laid out in front of the throne. You're holding the hand of Fran, and she says, I don't think that you should say that you're the new king to them. Pointing to the guards. I don't know that that's wise, Neil. Like whispering to you.
He just like holds up his fingers like, I've got this.
Like silence.
And, yeah.
And subject.
Yeah. And he's just gonna try to keep getting as close as he can to the throne.
You're there. So you basically arrive at this line of guards. It's like at a concert, right? Like they've made a line that you can't cross without encountering them, and it's some distance, 10 feet, 15 feet, from the dais that rises up behind it. It is to keep the rabble away from getting too close to the royal table. And like I said, there are some people sitting up there at that table, just mingling, talking, eating. But you don't see the king, obviously. The throne is empty, yet it draws all eyes and attention. As you step up, you get within a few feet of these guards, and they're just standing there, golden masked, every single one of them looking identical, unmoving. Neil, you notice, behind the throne, up on the wall behind it, is an absolutely massive and gorgeous painting of the gardens out in front of the palace. And you recognize your own work. You recognize some of the details. Wait a minute, I'm sorry. Am I mixing this up? I'm mixing this up. The thing you were working on in your apartment that was like kept aside, there was like a painting, right? Yeah. Of some kind that you were working on. And I can't know. The garden one was the one that was Abigail's.
That was
painting.
The one that she made, yeah.
That was one she made. Whatever it was you made, I can't remember if we ever got details of that. I don't think we did. But it was I remember it was like the end of the season and you were like sitting beneath it.
We saw it at the end of the season, the last moment of the season.
Right. Yeah.
We saw it at the end of the season. I don't remember the details of, you know, what the artwork was. I don't know if you do in this moment, but Neil certainly does. And this piece of...
I think it was like me, like, as the king, I think.
Mm. Was like there a crown involved? I feel like there was a crown involved.
Here. I think there was some kind of like crucifixion imagery or something going on.
Yeah. I can't remember. We'll have to go back and listen, but it is up and behind this throne. You recognize your own artwork. We can say for the moment that it is you as the king, but the face is vague enough in the way it's painted that it could be you, it might not be you, but you know, it's not a perfect whatever you call it, portrait,
likeness.
But it has an artistic value to it that evokes a certain majesty, and you realize, you recognize your own work up there behind it. At that moment, Vicky comes through the crowd, and you are there with Murnau. Vicky, go. You're on stage. Lights.
Neil.
I won't look at her.
Neil!
And she's looking like, up at the wall. And he's sort of ignoring you. And you see in one hand, he holds Fran's hand. In his other, he holds a bottle.
Fuck. She said, first she looks, she says, who's that? Who is this? Neil, who the fuck is this?
She leans over, past Neil, looks up at him. Neil? Looks across at you. I'm Fran.
Vicky.
Hi, Vicky. We're old friends.
Oh. Really?
Ow. Ow.
Somewhere. Okay. Somewhere.
Really?
Somewhere. Roger makes fun of Vicky's accent. She's like, I gotta talk to Roger when I find him. Hi. I need this bottle that he has.
Neil, she... Wait, what is that?
This is J.C. Lynn's bottle, and I have to give it to him. Otherwise, we're not going to get out of here, and we're all going to fucking die.
And she puts a hand on you, Neil, like on your chest. And she looks up, and she starts like shaking her head a little bit. She's like, don't give it to her, Neil. You can't give it to her.
Hey, I don't know you. You don't know me. Why? Why? What do you know that I don't know?
When she does this, when Fran does this, Neil has his cane. I think he has the bottle like in his top coat pocket. He has his cane and
oh, I'm sorry. Okay,
and he like whips it down on her forearm, with enough force to break it.
Oh my God! We'll roll a check.
Oh my God! You said you were. She said you were friends.
99.
99. Damn. Okay, so you do not succeed in breaking it. However, you do succeed in frightening her, and she lets go very quickly before you can do any damage, and she snaps back in shock at your reaction and looks up at you through this raven, this black raven mask, and she says, Neil, I would never hurt you. Why would you do that?
He just reaches out his finger. It's like Dikembe Mutombo style. Just waves it. It's like, you will not touch us again. And he reaches into his pocket and hands Vicky the bottle. He's like, I have no need of such things. Here. Just casually sort of pawns it off to her.
Okay. And Vicky, you now have this bottle, gorgeous bottle, and engraved into it says J.C. Lintz. And you see Neil returns to just staring at the throne. To your right, Bobby is in full military garb, standing as if he's one of the guards, looking out at the crowd after having dismissed his son for the nothing that he is.
What do you do with this bottle?
She's going to, well, first, she's going to like peer around Neil back to this woman, Fran.
She's like fallen away and has gone back into the crowd after this whole Dikembe Mutombo, incredibly disrespectful finger wag.
No.
Vicky's just kind of like, wait, why? Wait.
And she's gone, and you have no answer to this question.
Fuck me. Vicky is like looking around, trying to see where she sees Bobby. She's like, that's not helpful. She sees Neil, not helpful. She's going to look for Roger, the big form of Roger. At least Roger might have some semblance of sanity left. Does she see his clown form anywhere on the horizon?
This giant clown form.
She's scanning clown the form. Crowd. Scanning the crowd. You see this big side hair of a ridiculous clown in the middle of this Baroque masquerade ball. You see it as some distance away. Do you start to move toward him?
Yeah.
Oh, but wait. Just to the opposite direction of Roger, not far away, you see a man with a hefty, wide briefcase standing and just still, unmoving, looking out at the crowd. There's J.C. Lintz and there's Roger. Which way do you go?
She's going to take the bottle, pull open her dress, shove the bottle down betwixt her bosom. And
betwixt.
And then.
All right, so a giant ass bottle is clearly sticking
out. Spot.
Okay.
It's like a 2 liter bottle of Pepsi.
Exactly. I'm picturing you, Sydney, in a ball gown, and here's a bottle of wine. Stick that in your bra, and no one will know.
Got a straw poking out of it.
Good visual gag from Sid for those who want to tune into the YouTube.
Okay, so she's going to just hide the bottle, not walk up with it like in her hand, but she's going to move toward J.C. Lintz.
She turns away from Roger and moves toward J.C. Lintz. You walk up to this man, and he's standing there with the briefcase, just scanning the crowd, and he's wearing a plain white mask and just scanning back and forth. As you come up beside him, he turns and makes eyes with you, locks eyes with you. He sees you seeing him. He says, hello. How are you?
J.C. Lintz.
That's the name. Who are you?
What's in the briefcase?
That is my stock in trade. Though I'm afraid I haven't had much use for it lately. Why do you ask?
Show me yours and I'll show you mine.
What are you...
Take it out of context.
I don't understand you, sweetheart. What are you talking about? Show you what? Show me what? You got nothing.
I have something.
Wait, you have a giant bottle in your bra that I can see from here.
Don't look. My eyes are up here, bud.
My eyes are up here. No, he says, it's papers, business papers.
Can I see?
Who are you?
That's not important.
Yeah, it is. I'm not showing my briefcase to some woman I just met.
Do you know Dara Bondi?
Dara Bondi?
You were a guest in his hotel?
No. His hotel. The Broad Albans, his hotel?
Sort of.
No, I don't know him.
You stayed at the Broad Albans, though.
I did, yeah. For a little while. But then I found my way here. Hoping it helps to unlock the mind, you know? I was getting a little bit stagnant. He
He's just standing around. You hear all this coming through this white porcelain mask.
Take your mask off.
No, you take your mask off.
No, you take your mask off.
You're acting weird, lady. You're freaking me out.
Fine. Vicky, like, lifts her mask up.
To reveal a haggard old woman.
Oh, you're old and hot.
Yeah, I know. She puts it back on.
He'll take his porcelain mask and slide it up, and you see a handsome young gentleman, slicked back black hair, some product in it. Not amazing teeth, but okay. But otherwise, pretty handsome dude.
I have something that you want.
You do? What's that?
A way out.
A way out?
Do you want to get out of here? Is that your plan?
I think I'd like to meet the king. It's supposed to be a revelation of an experience. So I'm not going to go until after that.
You don't even know.
Eventually.
You don't know where you are?
I'm at the masquerade. I'm at the palace. What are you talking about?
Why the fuck are you so important then?
Why are you yelling at me? What?
Come all this way.
I'm not important. I'm nobody.
We come all this way and for what?
I don't know what to tell you, lady. I never met you before in my life. I'm not important.
What does your bottle matter? Why does it matter?
My bottle? You know where my bottle is?
Yes.
Where? Where is it?
Why do you want it?
Well, why does anybody want it?
That's what I'm asking.
I need to get to the core of myself. I need to understand who I am and what I'm capable of.
What is it? The fucking Patsu? You drink it? What is it?
The Patsu? I ain't drunk no Patsu.
I don't understand. I thought if we found you that you would tell us how to get out.
Who's we?
Fuck you.
I don't have to stand for this.
Yeah, I don't have to stand for this either. I'm going to find Roger.
And... baffled. Completely baffled.
What is happening?
This NPC watches you walk back into the crowd. He takes like a heavy sigh. It's like, takes like a handkerchief out from his suit. He dabs his head. Jesus Christ. What the hell was that?
What's wrong with this dame?
What the hell's wrong with this dame? We'll turn to Roger. As you're heading toward Roger, you get your alertness pings off. And you get a distinct, very eerie feeling. Your spidey sense goes up, and you turn, and you see a man that stands out. And I mean stands out in a big way. This man, it's hard to describe. Larger than you. Larger than everyone in the crowd. There is a certain magnificence about this man that is so overwhelming. And this is just after Sam walked away from you. He parted through the crowd, and then over kind of in that range, you notice this strange man. And before you can really zero in your eyes on it, this shocking chill goes through your entire body as you realize it is the king in yellow. You know this, but somehow you don't understand. There is no pomp. There was no introduction. There was no grand entrance that you can remember. This king is hidden among the crowd. It looks like a monster, but it has these large golden robes draped over it. And this strange mask that as you try to define it, almost makes you, forces you to turn away. You immediately have a feeling that approaching this figure could be the end of you. You also know immediately that you also immediately feel as if you are, the best way I can describe it is looking at the sun. So like you see this and almost immediately you must turn away because it strikes your psyche in such a way that it begins to damage you. So you immediately, sorry, give me a sanity roll.
49 under 58.
That is a success, and you take 6 points of sanity damage.
Jesus, the successes are worse than the failure.
On a success, you take 6 points of sanity damage as you feel the presence is here. It is in the room, and you can't, like, look at it. And as you're looking away, like something out of a nightmare, you can feel that it is coming toward you. You feel it moving through the crowd and getting closer. You're stunned and frozen, and your eyes can't rise to it. Your death, your end, all the questions about how this was going to come to pass are all happening and all rising to a crescendo right now, and you can't even look the threat in the face. You stand there completely and utterly frozen, looking down at your own hands, this entity, this experience, this unknowable force moves to you and basically touches you as it moves past you, as it's just another person in this party. And you can feel its aura as it moves past, shaking the reality that you know. Your eyes wash over in a white blur for a moment, and then they come back into focus as you shake with a psychic release. And you feel the presence moving away. And you feel as if the threat has passed. Except there is something now in your hands. You look down, and in your hands you're holding a green glass bottle. It has a bronze plaque over the top of it, over the label of it, and it says Roger Cumstone. And just underneath the bronze plaque, written in beautiful script on the label, as if where like the ABV would be or the ounces would be or something like that, it just says escape. And we'll see you next week.
What the fuck?
For the finale!
What?
Of Impossible Landscapes.
We're gonna die!
It ends next week! Brad just got his bottle!
We're all gonna die!
Baby. Oh, wow. Baby!
Wow.
God, I'm so scared.
Wow.
Wow.
All I can say is, wow.
Wow.